Martin Luther King Jr. Day is tomorrow, one of the rare occasions when the federal holiday honoring the slain civil rights leader falls on his birthday. We have two stories looking back on moments in the civil rights era and the life of one of its most prominent leaders. Motown, Martha and the Vandellas, Supremes, Temptations, Four Tops, right? Sure, the label made its reputation churning out some of the greatest pop music hits of the 60s and 70s. But a lesser-known side of Hitsville, USA is its collection of spoken word recordings released under the Black Forum label. Writer Suzanne Smith says the series documents a northern branch of the civil rights struggle. In her book, Dancing in the Street, Motown and the Cultural Politics of Detroit, she says Motown founder Berry Gordy was committed to the goals of the civil rights movement, and a speech by Martin Luther King in June of 1963 was one of Motown's first spoken word recordings.
His parents, Berry Gordy Sr. and his mother, Bertha Gordy, raised their children to acknowledge and participate in political life in some way. And so his recording in 1963 of Detroit's Great March to Freedom, I think, is a part of that, that he knew that he wanted to be part of the nonviolent struggle with Dr. King, and one way he could participate was to record these speeches.
And interestingly enough, that speech in Detroit in 1963 was a kind of early version of Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech, wasn't it?
Many Detroiters, I think, feel shortchanged that people don't realize that it was in Detroit that he first did a major rendition of that speech in front of an enormous crowd of 200,000, some people estimated.
I go back to the South not with a feeling that we are caught in a dark dungeon that will never lead to a way out. I go back believing that the new day is coming. And so this afternoon I have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day, right down in Georgia and Mississippi and Alabama, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to live together as brothers. I have a dream this afternoon that one day.
This also is the sort of the inauguration or the coming north of the movement, isn't it?
Exactly. One of the things that I wanted to articulate in my book was a real fleshing out of the urban civil rights struggle in the North for blacks, and that I felt the civil rights movement, the history of the civil rights movement in general, has focused too much on the South to the detriment of understanding the struggles that black Americans faced in the urban North in the 50s and 60s. And what the Great March to Freedom proved in June of 63, when King came to Detroit, was that he was very aware that blacks in Detroit had their own battles to fight, that it was not the same as Alabama or Mississippi.
Now, in the North, it's different in that it doesn't have the legal sanction that it has in the South, but it has its subtle and hidden forms. And it exists in three areas: in the area of employment discrimination, in the area of housing discrimination, and in the area of de facto segregation in the public schools. And we must come to see that de facto segregation in the North is just as injurious as the actual segregation in the South.
And speeches really weren't the only part of this of the forum series itself. I mean, there's really a wide variety, from poetry, music, as well as speeches. Who selected the material?
Three individuals founded the series and really were the producers and visionaries of the series, I would say. One was Junius Griffin, who worked for Dr. King, interestingly enough, as the publicity director of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, and then got a job in 1967 with Motown as their publicity director. The other two individuals were Ewart Abner, who was always very politically committed in the record industry to helping the cause of blacks getting equality in recording. And then the third individual is George Schiffer, the contract lawyer for Motown from the beginning, from the early 50s. Interesting man, Jewish American, who was very involved with CORE.
And we should point out that CORE is the Congress on Racial Equality.
Right? Yes. And so the three of them actually really shaped the array of material that you find on the series.
Yeah, because it's very interesting. I mean, in addition to the speeches of Dr. King and the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, the nonviolent movement, there are some militant voices in this series.
Without a doubt. The most militant, of course, is the famous Stokely Carmichael Free Huey recording.
We are talking about the survival of a race of people. That is all that is at stake. We are talking about the survival of black people. Nothing else. Nothing else. Nothing else. And you must understand that. Now, why is it necessary for us to talk about the survival of our people? Many of us feel, many of our generation feel, that they're getting ready to commit genocide against us. Now, many people say that's a horrible thing to say about anybody. But if it is a horrible thing to say, then we should do as Brother Malcolm says, we should examine history. The birth of this nation was conceived in the genocide of the red man. Genocide of the red man.
The Free Huey speech was connected to the arrest of Huey Newton in conjunction with his Black Panther affiliation in San Francisco, Oakland area. He was arrested, accused of a shooting of a police officer and put in jail. And Stokely Carmichael, he had several demands if he were going to do this, one of which is that he could speak on whatever he wanted to speak about, and that he would also always have the rights to that recording, which was unusual for Motown to grant. And it became a rallying cry for the Black Panther, Black Power movement. Another one that comes to mind, of course, is the famous Guess Who's Coming Home, which is black men recorded live in Vietnam, the Wallace Terry audio interviews from his famous book, The Bloods.
We don't have any business here.
The reason why I think that we shouldn't be over here, simple reason is because we have a war going on back home, and we should first clean up our own backyard before we try to clean up someone else.
I don't think we should be over here because it always was the black man fighting the yellow man for the white man. And it shows in cases where the white man is with the white man. Why didn't he drop the bomb on Germany when he was fighting Germany instead of dropping it on Japan? He don't drop anything that harmful on the people that consider the same as he is. So why should we be here fighting?
These guys were not rhetoricians. These guys were not leaders of the movement. Very articulate.
Exactly. They're the foot soldiers of the Vietnam struggle. And as you said, there's no holes barred, and they speak from their heart.
You know, it's not all speeches either. We talked about some of the poetry as well. An amazing recording, which is a series of conversations between the poets Langston Hughes and Margaret Danner. They read and discuss their work. And it's a bit like eavesdropping on two, you know, there's these two poets, two artists, talking very seriously about some very serious problems.
The Negro with the trumpet at his lips, whose jacket has a fine one-button roll, does not know upon what riff the music slips its hypodermic needle to his soul. But softly, as a tune comes from his throat, trouble mellows to a golden note, and suddenly the smoky air grows sweet, and dreams come back to stumble down the street.
Yes, that's a very lovely poem. I have not written one about music exclusively. I've written a poem about a sparrow, though.
Would you read it for me?
Yes. A sparrow is a bird. Why would a robin think that a sparrow was made to fly in a narrow line and tug at the bugs and worms that the robin struts away from with dislike? Be but a scavenger. A sparrow, too, is a bird, and who can tell a bird when to fly, or teach him when he must observe a place, stay in it?
It was a very early project for Motown, and Langston Hughes and Margaret Danner did it by themselves in New York City, the recording, as you're very right. It's a very intimate conversation between two poets who are soft-spoken and yet very political in their views, and so it's a marvelous moment.
One of the speeches that absolutely floored me was a talk given by Bill Cosby at an after-dinner speech. It was the first gala of the Congressional Black Caucus. Tell us about that.
Yes, it's one of the most fascinating recordings, I think, of the Black Forum series in that it was the first gala of the Congressional Black Caucus. And Bill Cosby, when you listen to excerpts of the speech, is very, again, forthright and political in his humor, almost to the level of a Dick Gregory-type humor.
Check yourselves out. I think you're scared to hold this kind of a convention at the Dunbar Hotel. I I think that what you worked so hard to buy and put on your back is not worth the Dunbar Hotel. I mean, after all, who would notice you? It's like church because I feel that while you're here, you'll say right on. And 2 hours later, after you're outside, it'll be right off.
And in this speech, it is so clear that he understands the importance of this very historic event, and he feels it's his obligation as a comedian to come and sharply offer comedy that speaks to the political moment.
There is a real authenticity about these speeches and about these words that you hear in this series that do you find lacking today, maybe in the rhetoric of the civil rights movement today?
Absolutely. I think, actually, I should probably correct myself a little bit. I actually do think after the recent elections, now there's an issue, a voting rights issue that African-American leaders are focusing on that is galvanizing people. And I think it does help to have that clear issue.
Suzanne Smith is professor of history at George Mason University and author of Dancing in the Street, Motown and the Cultural Politics of Detroit, published by Harvard University Press. Suzanne, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.